Hi, this is Jack Vaughn for the Talking Data Podcast. Again, I'm joined with Ed Burns from Search Business Analytics. And what we're going to be talking about today is some of the things we've seen recent months, even a little further back, in terms of the things we learned from talking with users, which is a big part of our goal in many stories, is to get that perspective. Ed, I know deep learning has been a big trend this year, certainly, and machine learning. I know you were talking to me about visual search and some of the analytics that go into that. That's certainly a new realm, but who did you talk to about that, and what did you learn?
Well, one person who I spoke to about that was Deep Varma. He's the vice president of engineering at the real estate listing website Trulia. And so he talked to me about how he and his team are using deep learning algorithms to identify certain aspects of what a home is. So they're using deep learning to identify certain features in a home based on the photos that get uploaded to it. So for example, you might be able to tell that a home has granite countertops based on its photos. And this might be something that isn't specifically called out in the verbal description. So it's just another way for people to find the homes that they're looking for. But he had some interesting things to say about the process. For one thing, he said that it's kind of more of an engineering challenge than it is a data science challenge, which is kind of not how we always think about deep learning. You know, we think about these really powerful algorithms that are really complicated, and you know, you need someone with a PhD to write them and all that. But he was saying that for what they're doing at Trulia, they're using a lot of pre-written Python code to do these image classification processes. And I think that says a lot about where we are with deep learning right now, is that there's just been so much emphasis put on the data science aspect of it, and everyone wants it, that a lot of it has become kind of automated at this point. But what he was saying has not been so automated is the engineering side of it. So
Does that relate to things like data pipelines, for example, the things that feed the learning?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I have a quote from him. He said, "This is where the data engineer comes into the picture. They build the data pipeline, simplify it, perform the validation, and then after that comes the machine learning models." So yeah, he was saying that for what he and his team are doing, they're really putting a lot more effort into you know, making sure that they have the data pipeline set up properly, that the data is in the right format and all that. And then once you get to that point, maybe it's kind of an overstatement, but to a certain extent, the deep learning kind of takes care of itself at that point.
Well, I think, you know, both of us champion our sites in the topic, so I lean a bit with data management towards data engineering. I think you with business analytics towards the data science, but I think that's one of the points of these podcasts we do is to try to find what lies in between, and that's particularly why I found this Deep Varma commentary of particular interest. I know you spoke with Peter Maynard of Equifax, of course, a very well-known company, and that was on what, the issue of interpretability or explainability?
That's right, yeah, and this is something that I think is becoming kind of a bigger issue in machine learning. We're hearing a lot more about it. Even the New York Times just recently wrote a pretty extensive article about it. And it's becoming such a big issue because so much of what happens in machine learning, we don't know why it happens. You know, you just have an algorithm that's picking up on correlations and, you know, using that to build towards some kind of probability, but who knows why, you know? It was interesting talking to Peter Maynard. He's the Senior Vice President of Data and Analytics at Equifax. About this, we spoke at the Gartner Summit back in March, And so from his perspective, he said, if you're Amazon, you don't care about why your model worked, but we can't have that. We being Equifax, obviously they work in financial services and lending. So for regulatory reasons, they need to be able to explain why they make certain decisions. And so a machine learning model that they have no visibility into isn't something that's going to work for them. So shortly before I talked to him, he and his team had worked on a project to make a credit scoring algorithm that is more interpretable. And so it doesn't just say, borrower X is or is not qualified. It says borrower X is qualified because they have a high credit score and low credit card debt. Basically, it shows you each of the inputs that go into the model, and it tells them the direction that it had on the model's recommendation. He sees it as a pretty big step forward for financial services, who at least for this type of credit decisioning have not always been able to use machine learning at a very deep level. I think that this is something that's not only interesting to people who work in finance who need this for regulatory reasons. I think that a lot of people are going to start looking at this issue and looking for ways to make their machine learning models. Everywhere I've gone, every conference I've been to, you hear someone talking about, well, yeah, it's a good model and it gives us interesting answers, but why? I think that it's something that everyone using machine learning is going to be interested in.
Yeah, well, it's been kind of a year of peeling back the onion. I think as we might have talked about before, you saw this in the original neural net, not knowing why the neural came up with the answer was a problem, and it does seem as though people are finding ways to work around that, or finding sort of reverse engineering methods to find out why they're doing what they're doing. Another area amongst the trends this year, it has to do with, well, neurals and the preparation of data for neurals. That's something that you were discussing in a story that had to do with amper music. That's again, we're getting into areas that are outside the conventional IT in a way.
That's right. Yeah, well outside conventional IT, I would say, with amper music. So they are an AI tool that automatically generates music for commercial purposes. Say you have a podcast that needs some intro music, you can just plug in some specifications into their tool and it will pop out some music for you. Back in June, I spoke to Cole Ingram. He's the music systems architect at Amper Music. And so he was telling me all about how his tool works, and it was kind of interesting, I thought, because it doesn't rely very much on neural networks. He was telling me that a neural network can really only replicate something that it has seen, whereas what he's trying to do is make something that is a little more creative, a little more responsive to individual preferences among users. So just, reproducing something that the model has already seen isn't really going to work for a lot of their use cases. So he's basically built a type of model. He couldn't get into specifically exactly how it works for proprietary reasons, but essentially it identifies general elements of music kind of from a music theory standpoint and classifies those as sort of building blocks for a piece of music, and then it has rules for sort of reassembling those elements into a unique piece of music. But he said one reason I shy away from the neural network approach is it learns a global probability of things. What it's shown is what it knows. But so I think it's kind of an interesting comment, because I feel like we all have kind of some experiences with that. Just the, our own interactions with recommendation engines online. I think we've all seen a recommendation engine give us some kind of weird recommendation just because we clicked on one weird link one time that isn't necessarily representative of our interests. I mean, for example, I use a news app on my phone that kind of tailors its recommendations based on what you've clicked on in the past. I'm a big Celtics fan. I read a lot of Celtics stories, but inevitably I will read a story about the Celtics playing, for example, the Milwaukee Bucks, and then the next day my news feed is filled up with stories about the Milwaukee Bucks. That's kind of the, I think, probably part of the problem that Ingram was talking about trying to overcome, this idea that these models can kind of over-optimize based on what they've seen and ignore the broader context of what's really happening in a situation.
Yeah, I think you're afraid them sometimes to say to click on garage door openers because you know you're going to see them for quite a while.
That's all you'll get for the next month.
Well, the tools are built by the humans, and hopefully both will gain in intelligence. As you and I have discussed, a lot of this brings to mind the old adage, G-I-G-O, garbage in, garbage out. And so I guess you could say a lot of the things are new, and yet there's some fundamental underlying trends that keep emerging. Well, this is last podcast for 2017, but we'll be going to be turning the page shortly and looking forward, and we'll be... I'll be looking forward to speaking with you, and of course, we're always glad to have people join us for the Talking Data podcast.